Welcome to All Road 65 Max Radio, where the road ahead gets brighter as we journey toward truth, traveling through our dreams and inspiration into a new reality. It's time, and your ticket is waiting. All aboard All Roads Lead 65 Max with Pamela Henderson.
Greetings. Thank you for joining me on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson. My focus is my mission statement to help create a quality of life through social growth, inspiring Jews to become leaders by establishing partnerships with corporations, donors, sponsors, nonprofits, volunteers, the community, and abroad. Join me every other Tuesday at noon at BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio. My special guest today is author Eileen St. Laurin, who met the legendary Ray Charles some 23 years ago, never expecting that she would one day go blind herself. Now, the iconic singer's presence is felt in St. Laurin's new book, Good Life Mississippi, an immersed story that plunges readers into the sights, sounds, and social constructs of the 1950s and 60s segregated in the Deep South. At last, thank you for this interview chance, Eileen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Pamela Henderson, for having me.
You are so welcome. So I am going, it's so juicy and I'm so inspired by you. I must say that first, but tell me, Eileen, you have met the legendary Ray Charles. So exciting. Tell me about that experience.
I did some 23 and a half years ago. I was a graduate student undergrad at University of Nebraska in Lincoln. And he came there and I entered a writing contest. And I actually won and scribbled something down and I wanted to meet him. And they picked me and I won and he came and I talked to him and I turned that whole experience, Pamela, into a novel.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. That is inspiring, I must say. Absolutely. You grew up in Hattiesburg and was raised in, what is that, Patel?
Petal on the road, the road petal. Petal Mississippi.
and you became an award-winning photojournalist and news writer in your early career. Tell me about that.
Yes, I went back to school after working for 11 years, and I failed my physical to be a police officer. And I went back to a junior college and I started writing, which I'd always wanted to do. And everything I wrote, the first thing I wrote won the award. The second thing I wrote won the next award and so on. And they said, what else do you have? And I said, I don't have anything else. They said, keep writing. And in fact, I was so raw and so real and new and fresh that I wasn't even invited to the ceremony. And I won two of the four categories in the state of Mississippi for press, university, press writing. I forgot what it's AP, you know. And then I just, you know, realized that, you know, I knew I could write since I was 4 years old, and I always had written. And so when I went to college, it showed me that I could do it because I read other people's work. And I realized that, hey, you know, I can do that. I just didn't know how to do it. And even when I worked in the real world outside of college, every report I had ever written, they would call me and say, did you write this? I said, yeah. And they'd say, oh, my goodness, you should publish this report, you know. And I said, really? They said, yeah, it reads just like a story. And so I was flabbergasted. And very surprised, and I had a little roommate that they gave me to take care of. She didn't speak any English, And I thought she did because I just thought she did. Don't ask me why. I don't know if she didn't speak enough English. But I would read her all my stories. Her name is Nian. And I'd say, what do you think? And she'd say, oh, very good. You know, I said, really? She said, yeah, very, very good. So I would turn it in and get an A or a right. And then I found out later, I said, Nian, why didn't you tell me you don't speak English? She goes, well, it's still very good to me. You know,
wow.
So I helped her and she helped me because I didn't believe in myself and she didn't had to find herself. She was from Vietnam and she had to find herself in her voice and I found myself in my voice there at the same time. And what a match, huh?
Wow. Isn't that ironic when you kind of doubt yourself and someone else can see the greater good in you and they can also see the spotlight. But us, it's a little hesitant and sometimes it could be like, oh, okay, well, you know, I didn't look at it that way. So tell me, Eileen, how do you know that you can become a journalist? Is it just from the writing skills or what type of passion does it take?
For me, it's like washing my hands under cool water. I listen, I tell the truth, and it works. And 90% of it comes out edited except for commas, run-ons, and semicolons. You know? And it's a gift. I personally believe that you are born to do certain things and it's a calling. And I was never able to answer my calling because, Pamela, I didn't have any confidence in myself.
No.
Coming from, no, none, zero, zip, none. Even if people tell me I was pretty, I didn't believe it. It went in one ear and out the other. And teachers would call my mama when I was young, and like in the ninth grade, and say, did your daughter write this? And she'd say, as far as I know, you know. She'd say, Eileen, did you write this? And I'd say, yeah. And they were all just so surprised, you know, but nobody extended a hand to help me. So when I went to school and I worked in TV, radio, and film, I just fell into my place, you know. And then when I went to university in Nebraska, I fell into a really big place because there was like 25,000 people there. And, I was taking journalism and he called me in one day and he said, sit down. And so I did and I sat down and he said, I want to tell you something, but don't you tell anybody I ever told you this. You have a talent. I said, really? He said, you have talent. I said, oh, thank you so much. He said, but you have to leave journalism. You belong in English. So get out. You know, he kicked me out of the journalism major and I just burst out crying, you know. And I went back to English and they said, what's wrong with you? I said, I have a talent. I have talent. And they said, oh my goodness, well, come in. And I said, I can't be a journalist. I have to be a writer. And so that's how it all kind of evolved into finding out what I really could do in my calling and taking, you know, from one step to the other. I failed a lot, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was reading about who you are, and like I said, I am very inspired. But, you know, I want to touch a little bit about this subject, which is really, really intriguing, especially when someone else has gone through some issues and challenges. Tell me about the battles, having complex feelings, as you stated, of guilt, loss, and segregation when you were 12 years old.
Yes, I can do that. I had a friend, I was like in around the fourth grade, I think it was 10, 11, 12, you know, those years. And they jerked us all out of public school, made us stay home, then they put us on buses and they sent us to these churches, all the white kids, to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would let some of the African American, which they called them just black children then, to come in with us in the room, in the church. Now, we're in a church, okay, in the Deep South. And so there was a girl that sat in front of me. Her name was Patricia. And she fell asleep. And the teacher come by, and she hit her. She didn't just like tap her. She just whopped her on the back. And Patricia didn't say a word. But I saw a tear going out of one of her eyes. I think it was her left eye. Broke my heart to pieces. That was the compassion I was talking about. Because I thought, you know, Patricia can't help it. She's tired. She fell asleep. She didn't have to hit her like that. You know? And she said, she said some things to her. I don't really remember what she said, but Patricia never flinched. She never talked back. She never said a word. And in my heart, I knew that was wrong, you know, because that's how I was raised to believe red, brown, yellow, black, and white. They are precious in the sight. Jesus loves the little children of the world. Well, mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but when I did the research for my book with that song, that many people have taken out the word brown. And that's why they don't include it. I included it in the book. So that's how I experienced. And I'm still friends with Patricia. I hear from her once in a while. She found me after like 40 years. Okay. I'm
on Facebook.
On Facebook. And she said, I always wonder what happened to you. You were so nice to me. Why were you nice to me? And I never forgot you. I never forgot you. And, you know, I think you're born with compassion. I've battled in my own mind if you can learn compassion.
Right.
I don't know if you can, because I have it. Even no matter what, I have it. You know, it's just ingrained in me.
Yes. You know?
And that was some of it. And a part about loss. I've lost almost every friend I've ever had. They've passed. And that's included in the last 10 years, in the last 5 years, and 3, 2, and 1 from COVID and so on and so forth. And so it's just become a thing in my life. You know, I've kind of tell people, you probably don't want to be my friend, you know, because they always, something happens, no matter what and no matter what age. And so I experienced that loss, and that's a hard loss, because, you know, you become friends with somebody. And what I ended up doing, Patricia, is when I wrote my work, my characters became my friends and family. And so I try to take care of them, even though some of them have to die. You know, I figured it out now that death is life and life is death. It is a circle. It evolves, you know, into one to the other. So you just can't help those things.
Yeah.
And so I just focused on them and I took care of them. And my books are, to me, like my children. You know, I care about them and, you know, so on and so forth. I can't make you like them, you know, anybody like them. But if I'd have had this book when I was at those ages, my life would have been different, I believe, because unknowingly and a little bit unknowingly, but subconsciously with my imagination, I think everything is covered in this book that a young person would need to be inspired, as you say, and to build self-esteem. Because when I was growing up, some people had it, some people didn't. I was one of those who just didn't have it. And I still struggle with it now.
Do you?
Yeah. Even when I met Ray Charles, my favorite part of meeting Ray Charles was, if you look in the back of the book, I'm going to give this away, look in the very back of the book on the page before the study guide and look at the hands that are holding. That's my hand and Ray Charles' hands, because you see a picture of us. And that was my favorite part of meeting him. He was very humble, because I read him. And of course, before I read it, his bodyguard, which was his nephew, read him what I had written. And he said, she wrote that about me. He was so surprised. And it's exactly what I put in the novel in the chapter called Paradise, when Myra Boone meets him. And so my favorite part is when people come together and hold hands and inspire each other. They may not sing Kumbaya or, right, you know, all that, you know, we are the world, which is all good, all that's good, but just, you know, to try to understand that people have differences and different perceptions, and don't look at the color of people's skin, look at their heart, look beyond that.
Yeah.
Because I believe God is not a color, he's a light.
Yeah.
And people have a light.
That is so true. We are all in this salad bowl, just mixed around, and we're going to have disagreements, and our beliefs are different, but we have to learn how to respect each other's values and morals. That is the main concern, especially here in the United States. That's totally important. So, Eileen, your dream, and I'm going to get back to this again, of meeting your daddy's friend, the legendary Ray Charles Robinson, you stated was a natural sense of place of your true calling. Tell me about that.
Well, everything I write about Ray Charles Robinson is true, from being down in St. Augustine, Florida. I've been saying Georgia, but it's Florida, home for boys, learning how to weave baskets. And that's how he learned to correlate music in his head. And if somebody is blind and totally blind, because I had my sight for years and years and years until I was in my 40s, and I didn't think a thing about it until I lost it. And if somebody's totally blind, you get this strong sense of everything else around you. And I don't know how to explain it. I just know that it was inspiring to me to meet someone that everybody mistreated. Because they mistreated him. I don't know if you know that, if you ever seen the movie Ray after he passed.
Yeah.
But they did mistreat him. They took his money. They mistreated him. And, you know, he came out and everybody says he was a genius. He was very humble when I met him. He did not have an attitude. He did not have an air about him of superiority or anything. He was very frail. He was very... He needed help, you know, needed guidance, but he had his talent, see. Your talent doesn't leave you. Your voice doesn't leave you either if you have the voice. I was always concerned for the last 20 years I wasn't able to use my voice. I had nowhere to put it, nowhere to use it. And I was concerned, and I would say, please, God, don't let me lose my voice. And I didn't lose my voice. I didn't lose my talent. And even though I lost my sight and regained partial sight, I still had my gift. So everybody's born with a gift, and when my dream to make it come true, I guess, that helped me answer my true calling, because when I wrote what I wrote, I prayed over it. I said, God, if it's your will for this to happen, let this happen, and boom, it happened, you know? And that's my kind of best answer of giving you that. I remember my husband called me. I was at work. I used to work security. He said, somebody just knocked the door, Eileen, and said they were from Ray Charles's people and gave me something, an envelope to give to you. She said, what'd you do this time, you know? And I said, really? And to me, that was God's answer to my prayer, just like this book is an answer to prayer. And I believe it's timeless. It can go on. If anybody's going to read a book, especially a young person that's having trouble, and the world's really different, but it's still the same. In the 50s and 60s, it's just more people. Yeah. It will help them. It's not easy to have compassion, forgiveness, and love, and unconditional love. It's not easy.
It's not.
Sometimes people, maybe they really wouldn't like you if you weren't successful. You know what I mean? Or a star.
Yeah.
But those people, everybody's just like you and me. They all go home and do the same thing. They're all alone when they get home with themselves. Trust me, you're alone with yourself when you get home.
I do. I'm a firm believer in that. Okay. You can take that hat off, that wig and all that makeup, and you are who?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Reading your story was very inspiring, Eileen, from your parents enduring the prejudice of being born biracial. Tell me about that.
Well, Myra Boone, the main character's parents, Marigold and Virgil Boone. Virgil was born deaf and dumb, and they put him in a home for boys. That's how he met Ray Charles. And poor Virgil was deaf and dumb, and he drove, but he could sign, and he could read lips, and he could sort of hear the music. You know what I mean? He had this little sense of music. So he would drive Ray Charles around and so one was deaf and dumb and one was blind. So you can imagine that picture in your mind. And so Ray Charles went on off to Hollywood, and he made it out of the area, out of, you know, Florida. And Virgil didn't. He made it on the road to nowhere. He just ran moonshine and did window washing. And he met Marigold, which she came from a good family. And after, he was always considered questionably biracial, that he had some drops of Negro blood in him. It was never proven, but that's what they said. And so the main character, Myers, always, her mother didn't let her go to school. She had to read the Bible, copied books from the Bible, and that's how she learned the rhythms of reading and writing. And her mother had been a Sunday school teacher over in Goodlife from a prominent good family that raised hogs, cantaloupes, and watermelons. And when she married Virgil Boone, they never spoke to her again. And they moved off to Meridian, Mississippi, which everybody knows something about Meridian one way or the other. And it really didn't make any difference other than that they were socially isolated in the Piney Woods. And poor Myra, who was born on Christmas Day, her birthday's coming up, and Sunday in 1950.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah.
Happy
and,
birthday.
thank you. And, so she was born, and so her mother latched onto her like a snapping turtle, and like she said, she was her hope and her baby Jesus, you know.
Right. And
Myra actually means prophet, which I didn't know that till I wrote that. I didn't realize that. That's not, I didn't do that on purpose. And
okay.
So she is the voice of the people, the downtrodden, the low people, and, you know, people whispered and said bad things and made fun of them. And without giving away too much of the book, she ends up losing her family, and she ends up back in Goodlife with these 100 people. So, and with her elderly grandparents, who she's never met, who's never spoken to her, and boom, she's thrust in the middle of them, and she starts the first grade at 12 and a half years old.
Wow.
Yeah, put her in the first grade, and she, her dream had been to go to the first grade, and she finds out that's not what I had thought it was going to be.
Right.
They made fun of her and beat her up, and first one thing and another. And so her and her mama, getting back to her mom, I'm sorry, would ride in the car, old Ford, and listen to Ray Charles on the radio. Her daddy couldn't hear him, but he could feel the beat of the music. He knew it was Ray. And he always tried to talk about Ray, and he stutters. He talks in the book. You know, he talks like 30, 40 pages in the book. He just... And they read his... And he calls Mirabeau, my goal. And so, and Myra loves him, no matter what, right? She loves her daddy. And he is drunk. He runs moonshine in a truck called the Rainbow, painted like the Rainbow. So there he goes, riding the roads, talking about Ray Charles, listening to him on the radio in the Rainbow. Because he believes his pot of gold is at the end of the rainbow, and the only way he knows to make it is to run moonshine. Okay? I mean, we in 1950, 60, that's all they need to do where I'm from.
Yeah.
Except cotton. And so she dreams when she loses her parents of meeting Ray Charles, because she believes that's her connection to her daddy and success. And she writes God a letter. She's big on writing God letters. I'm big on writing God letters. And she does, and God answers her letter. And I won't tell you all of it, you know, but she does, her dream does come true. And, you know, that's how it all kind of evolved into what happened to me happens to her. And it's just a miracle, you know. I mean, it wasn't planned. It wasn't thought out. And I would have never in my life believed it would have happened like that, you know.
Right.
Never.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, here you are in your early career reaching amazing heights, majoring in journalism, and then you became blind for 3 years. I know this had to be a devastating experience. Do you mind sharing about that ordeal?
Well, what happened to me, I really don't know why, it wasn't genetic. It just happened. I had two back-to-back retina detachments at an early age. within 6 months of each other. And the first one was the right eye. And the doctor said, oh, it never happened again. It will not happen to the other eye. The week before Christmas, like this week, it happened to the other eye. So fortunately, we were living in Massachusetts, and the guy, the doctor that invented the tool to attach the retina was my doctor. And so I was fortunate, because if I'd have been somewhere else, I'd be blind with a dog with a remote control, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. Right. However, I was blessed to have been within 1 mile of him. So I had to go to him a lot. I had 11 surgeries before it detached. And then both of them eventually detached. They kept hanging on, I suppose you would say. And I had to hold my down. They put a gas bubble in my eye, each eye, and I had to hold my head down for 280 days one time. And the other time was, I don't know, I'm going to say 6.5 months for that one, and not move and just sit in a chair. And I'd walk the floor at night and listen to movies, hoping they would reattach. And they didn't. The right eye I see from 12 to 1, and the left eye has half an eye. And that's better than most. I mean, they're called windows of light. And you can look at me, and you can't tell I can't see sometimes, you know. Right. And unless I put on the glasses. And my husband always said, you look like Charles in them glasses, and big glasses, but he said, you look good in them, though. So that's, I took that as a compliment, but it was not easy. You know, it was very hard. I ate with my hands, and, you know, the poor guy took care of me. He was wonderful, and, you know, don't have really that much family. I have a sister, but she has her own family and stuff, and I love my sister, and she loves me. She's a little bit older than I am, you know. And my mom and them wasn't able to help me, you know, and stuff. So my husband did a good job. And then I had to learn how to, my brain had to learn how to focus one dot at a time and reconnect things to the eye and the retina. So yes. I wrote this novel one peck at a time on the computer. I had to rewrite it. And so that's how I learned how to correlate one type of one letter at a time, dot, 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 you know, typing one letter. It took me 2 years to type the thing. And that's a long time if you think about it when you hold the book in your hands, you know.
It is.
It's a long time. But I was just always happy. I never got discouraged. And I made up my mind straight on. I'm going to trust God, and I'm not going to cry. And I said, God, whatever you have for me, I'm going to do it. And I learned real quick, I'm going to answer my calling and get on with it. You know, I'm going to write.
Amen to that. You are an inspiration to many. And that is really what it takes. We have to continue to move forward. And we have to encourage ourselves to move forward. And especially when we deal with challenges and obstacles, you know, but you are a great woman, I must say.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I just think I'm forgiven. You know, I just think I'm forgiven. I think I would like to, my dream now, if you want, do you want to know my dream?
Yes. Tell me about your dream.
Okay. My dream is to have Good Life Mississippi and its characters and everything that follows turned into either a series or a movie, and because of the fact that it can reach more people and help the world and find peace and help people to be encouraged and inspire and not ever give up, you know, and to laugh and to cry and know that God does answer prayer and God does answer letters, and everybody has something in their life, you know, and I probably, not very many people know all of that about me. Especially where I grew up, they didn't know I couldn't see. You know, people just had no idea, and they still don't. They will now. You know,
<That's right>.
They will now. And you know, my husband has been great. He helps me, you know, and so on and so forth. But I'm very independent. I don't give up. You know, I just don't. But you know, every day is a new journey, and it's not easy. I won't say it's easy. Is it easy breezy? No. Do I get discouraged? Yes. A lot? A whole lot. And am I ambitious? Very. Will I ever give up? Never.
No.
And because I feel like people should see this and know, you know, that it can help them. I want to help them in some way or the other. And, you know, I think this is just all I have to give. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand. Yeah. I totally understand. Well, with that being said, we're going to take a break and we will be right back. All right. Well, I'm going to go to the ladies' room and I'll be right back.
Okay. Where are you guys at? What state? Okay. Am I talking too much? No, I mean in general. I'm like my characters. I talk my head off because they're like 90% dialogue and they never shut up. And I even talk in my sleep. Da, 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 complete sentences. Da, 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 da. I never stop. Yeah. That's why we make a good screenplay, because it's all dialogue. I wrote a screenplay already, but it just has never been touched or seen or anything. I have had a lot of time, you know. Well, you know, you look at other people and you think, well, also, you know, you got to do something with your life. And if you feel like that's what you're supposed to do, you got to try it. Because if you don't try it, you won't be happy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Will you guys offer, like, people can listen to this somewhere else if they want to? Because I have like 100 people that would go listen to this. Okay. Because they can Google it and find it. Perfect. They'll be happy to do that. I have a lot of people that can't get out, you know, of the house. And even if they can, got COVID and everything else, but they listen to it. They would. Yeah. Good.
Yes. I am back. Thank you so much. I am ready. Welcome back to BBS Radio, All Road 65 Max Radio. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson, and I am talking with my special guest today, Arthur Eileen St. Laurin. You still with me?
Yes, I'm here, Pamela, in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
All right. So, let's get to the good part. I know we've been discussing a lot about different things and everything, but you wrote a book. That book is Good Life Mississippi. But let me ask you, Eileen, how did you come up with the title?
Well, I had read William Faulkner in college, and I had read Sherwood Anderson, who helped Faulkner. And he had written a book called Winesburg, Ohio, which is about a town called Winesburg. And in Nebraska, when you pass the Nebraska sign, it says, Welcome to Nebraska, Good Life, something like that. And I've heard a lot of people always say in the South, I want a good life. And I had three other titles for this book. And for some reason, I just kept going back to Good Life, Mississippi, because it was a city of 100 people, and the surrounding city is called Soso, which is a real city in Mississippi. Then other cities that I have there, Goshen, are real cities. But Good Life is my fictional city because there's no such thing as a good life, but their life is what you make it, and it can be good.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
That's how I did it. That's the truth. That's my truth.
Yeah, good. Very good. Eileen, you said that the book Good Life Mississippi is an inspirational book of faith. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that, you know, people suffer in their life, you know, like what you were talking about with guilt, loss, and even through segregation. You know, some people get divorced, some people lose the one they love, some people get, you know, hit by a car, some people get disease and all kind of things because we're human, right? And we just have to reach out through our faith, and there is a higher power, and I believe that it's through God and through faith that that's how you reach out and you make things better.
I do agree. You also said that your aim is to provoke readers to contemplate an understanding and tolerance that people whose life experiences and perceptions appear outside the norm are very real. Real. Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Well, in Mississippi and North Carolina and everywhere, there's always people that it doesn't seem normal, you know. They may be a little grotesque. They may have things wrong with them. And they're outside the norm, okay, whatever normal is in 2022 going on 23. And their experiences in life have been, some people suffer all their lives, right? You know, they suffer. And they appear like they're outside the norm, but that's very real to them. So to tolerate these people, you have to learn unconditional love, okay? And unconditional love comes with, I believe personally, knowing God, okay? I don't think, and me personally, if I didn't feel like I knew God and believed in God, I wouldn't be able to tolerate and have unconditional love for people.
Right.
That's my personal opinion, you know? You know, it's funny. It's not funny, haha, but it's peculiar funny that years ago, you know, I was the only one in school that wanted to do the devotional growing up, okay? Because nobody would ever raise their hand to do that but me. And it's because I just knew, that's what I knew. I knew church and devotion. I didn't know the other stuff about life. And people were not afraid back then to talk about stuff like this, but even now I hesitate. You notice that? I hesitate.
Yeah.
Or I talk about the God and stuff because people get upset and so on and so forth. And like I've said to people before, you don't have to pray to God, pray to a tree, pray to whatever you want to pray to, but pray. Find your inner strength and power and turn somewhere. And I'll tell them, they'll say, Eileen, I don't pray, I'm atheist, but they're still my friend. I said this one time, just pray for me, okay? I'm trying to get a novel published. I'm trying to write. This is the most difficult thing in the world. And they'll say, okay, I'll pray for you. You know, they actually do that for me. And I really, really appreciate it. And I love them dearly for it. And they'll buy my book. I don't know if they read my book, but they do buy it. And I've had people contact me and say, I'm the one that prays to trees. I go to Central Park, Eileen, and I love nature. And I get that connection by praying with something. I said, see, I knew people pray to trees, you know? But, you know, I don't know. My point was, I'm getting off on a tangent, is that you have to have, I believe, positive thinking works through faith. And my faith comes with believing in God.
And you're absolutely correct. And, you know, getting back to what you were saying about when we discuss God nowadays and some people just don't want to hear it. But I tell you, if you come on my show, I am one of God's jewels. And I'm going to speak about it. Okay. That's who I love. That's my everything. Even the times in when I had gone through challenges and obstacles and I felt a little alone because of, it was like no one would have understood my story. And it was really, really heartfelt. And it had really taken me some time to overcome that pain that I was in. But here I am, still a very passionate woman, and I have a beautiful soul. And sometimes people can abuse that and really don't understand that I can also be the worst person you may want to tip off on the side there to the left.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you wear your heart on your sleeve? I do.
Yeah, I do. I do too.
Yeah, I do.
I do.
I do.
Absolutely.
That's why that happens. Because we're kind, considerate, and loving people, and that's what God calls us to be.
Yeah. That is so true.
We're getting beat up. We're doing the right thing.
Right. You know, I tell you, I had to really, which if it wasn't for my husband, whom has tough skin. And he taught me that I had to have tough skin, not to take everything to heart because I wear my heart on my sleeve. So that has helped me a lot, I must say. So yes, you are absolutely right. So tell me, Eileen, now you have been discussing in the book about Myra, but are you Myra? You Myra?
Not necessarily, but it could be.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't want to exactly, you know, say that, but I think we're all Myra.
Okay, that's a good way to look at it.
I can go with that. A friend of mine wrote me that I grew up with around the corner. His name is Joe. And Joe wrote me and said, "Now you can tell all these people that mistreated you in school that you got a book." And I said, you know, he remembered that. I wondered if people remembered that, you know. But, you know, as a child, she was really, you know, mistreated because of, you know, her questionably being biracial and stuff. And I think all of us, maybe some of us just miss that. You know, maybe there are people that don't get that. But it, one way or other, people can identify with being different, being mistreated, and not sure of yourself, you know. But I don't want to come out and, you know, say that for sure, but I'm going to say we're all Myra to a sense, you know, to a sense. And she's not a victim. She doesn't get victimized. She never gives up. She overcomes. And I don't know why she doesn't give up other than her faith, you know.
And she's victorious.
That childlike faith that God talks about in the Bible.
Okay. Yeah. I looked at her as being victorious myself. So and discussing about the book with you. And you are a victorious woman yourself, I must say.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you saying that.
You know,
I really do.
So
well, you're my angel. You're my earth angel, Pamela Henderson.
Yes.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate that compliment. So the book, Good Life Mississippi, you say plunges readers into the 50s and 60s and the deep South. Tell me about that. Why do you say that?
Well, you know, there's some stuff going on back then, you know. You had Dr. King and he actually comes to Good Life. I had taken that out because I didn't know if I was good enough to have written about Dr. King, but now I wish I hadn't. But I could always put it back in the second book if I wanted to, or even the third one. But in the 50s and 60s, you know, everybody was growing up segregated and everybody was poor. And, you know, I'd heard stories and a lot of it, too, I experienced myself. And, you know, I come from a place where it has two red lights. Now it has three because of Walmart. And my grandma had nine children, okay? She was part Cherokee Indian. And she had them all. Well, yeah, she had them all in a row, Eileen. they all passed in a row. When they all passed except for one, like eight of them passed in the row they were born. You know, it's kind of odd. Isn't that interesting? But she swept the dirt and had something to do, you know, made straw brooms. And we didn't have a lot to do. Go to the creek, pick something, get some peanuts, go to the store once a week. So I wrote about what I remember us doing with all those people, you know, and listening to their stories and stuff. And it wasn't easy. Did we know it wasn't easy? Not unless somebody told us or we saw somebody else that lived in a brick house, you know. My thing was I always dreamed of having a brick house. Mama, can we get a brick house? Can we get a brick house? No. That never got either one of them. But it was, you knew when you grew up in the 50s and 60s, you knew you were didn't have anything like some people did. You know, you knew the doctors and lawyers and the people that owned the diamond shops did. But you knew that you didn't. And you especially, it was so segregated and they called it the quarters, but they used the N-word in front of it. And we used to drive that way on our way to church. And Mama would say, look at all these poor people, Eileen. And I would look at them, and we would go visit them on Saturdays. And so, well, it was mostly Saturdays. And just go visit them, take them something, be good to them. Just go. I mean, I don't think we didn't ask them to church, but we went to visit them and we took them something because you just couldn't have asked them to church. It just wasn't going to happen. I've seen them come in the church I grew up in and then that they would, some elder would go to the back and ask them to leave and tell them they didn't belong there.
You know, that is so heartfelt because here we are, a culture of greatness. And I mean, we have created and designed, you know, we helped make this world, you know what I mean?
And all
the creators of the light bulb, potato chips, I can go on, and I'm like, I guess it's just really, really heartfelt. So we're gonna move on.
Okay.
You now divide your writing time between Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Madison, Mississippi. How is that working out?
It's fun. It's a little tough trip, but we do it. We built a house over there to launch the novel, and I had some family there, but unfortunately, they're sick and in their latter of years. So there's no one left but me.
Really?
I have one sister left and some great nieces and nephews. And everybody else is gone. And so I love Mississippi. I like Chapel Hill a lot. I don't know. I'm one of these people, you know what? I could be anywhere and be happy as long as I had a pencil, piece of paper, and a Bible. And I could sit down and write for the rest of my life. And so that's over there. When I go over there, I don't want to leave because I'm good. I'm happy. When I come here, I don't want to leave because I'm good and I'm happy. So we made that house a mirror of this house in a small way. That way I memorize everything because of my eyes. And everything in that house is the same place it is in this house, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And that way I won't lose it. You know what I mean? If something's been moved, I'll say, where's the broom? You know, it was here. This is where it goes. And So that helps me. And I like it. I love Mississippi. I love her people. There's some good people there. There's some good people here. Have I found my home yet? No. Quite frankly. Sometimes I think it's Chapel Hill. Sometimes I think it's Mississippi, North Carolina or Mississippi. Then sometimes I think I want to go abroad and I say, I don't even speak a language. What am I going to do?
<You know? laughs> Take the book. Take a book.
Take a book.
Or use the app on the phone and say something in their language and then just let them listen to it. You'd be just fine.
Yes, that's exactly what. And I'm so surprised because my book is in other countries now. I don't know if you know that, but it's in like Portugal, Australia, Italy, France. And the weekend I found like it's in Switzerland, Denmark, and Finland, I believe it is. And okay. I'm like, who knew? I'm like, it's in those languages. And I'm like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble now, Lord. You can help me, but I don't know if you can.
Mm-hmm. What opportunities are you seeing that have been rewarding, such as what you just stated? Any other opportunities, in your opinion?
Well, I've had some celebrities contact me with regard to wanting the book to consider for a movie or a series. However, that's just hope, you know, and that could be years down the road, right? You know, you can't take that and put it, you know, in the bank or anything, but it is good. You know, it's a good thing. I used to get real excited, but now I think, we'll see. And, you know, when I first began writing, a friend of mine who has passed now, my best friend, she got COVID in Mississippi. She said, Eileen, it took the Israelites, I think she said the Israelites 40 years to get out of the wilderness, right? Is that right?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay. She said, it could be 40 years before you get a book published. She said, I said, are you out your mind? I said, I've got no 40 years, but you know, it took 24.
Wow.
So, yeah. But of course, I could never finish. That was my problem. I could never finish with anything. So I just took it and broke it in two and made two books. That's what ended up happening. And, what I have seen is that's why I'm hopeful for the other. And I decided that's what I'm going to, you know, hope for. And I want people a lot of people that read this book say they cry. And I was very surprised. That really surprised me. My mentors used to tell me it's hilariously sad. That I believe. I do believe that because it does make me cry and it does make me laugh. So there you go. It is hilariously sad. So what I've seen open, people tell me that's their story. Can you believe that? They'll say, it's my story, Eileen. You're talking my story. You knew my story.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm shocked. And they said, one girl told me, she said, I had to stop reading when you got to Philadelphia, and what happened in Philadelphia happened to my family and my grandmother, and I did that, and so on and so forth, right? And I said, are you black? She said, no. I said, well, how did that happen to you? You know, that's what I said. Yeah. How did that happen to you? And she said, well, we were the ones that did it to them. Ta-da. Can you believe that? So it broke her conscience. It hurt her conscience. And she said, it made me cry. And I remember my grandma said, do this to them, these little black children, and so on and so forth. And I said, oh, my goodness, I cannot believe. And I've had a lot of people write me at 2 in the morning and say, I can't read this because you're telling my story. And I'm just very surprised about that. And, yeah. But that's a good thing, I guess, you think?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One way or the other. And, right. And Myra, I don't know if you got to the part where she gets really, really damaged and, not her eyes, but other parts of her gets very, very damaged. And, she still keeps going, you know, and, everything. And that does happen to a lot of us in life. Some people miss that. They don't have anything happen to them at all. And I guess, you know, God bless them. I'm happy for them, but I wasn't one of those people. I have seen that opportunity happen. So that's my best answer. And getting into Barnes & Noble was unbelievable that they let me go to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, such as myself, I am also a woman who wears a few hats. Mm-hmm. Who do you look up to for inspiration? And do you have a mentor?
You know, I did have three mentors and they passed. Unfortunately, 92, 89, and I forget the age of the other one. And Ann Tyler used to be a good friend of mine. We're not enemies or anything. The author, Ann Tyler, that wrote Breathing Lessons, Ladder of Years, and so on and so forth. And she and I used to write each other. We don't anymore. She read my first work. She said I was pure and original, a natural-born writer. And I wish I did. The only person I can say is the Holy Spirit. And I know that's a little vague, but that's my answer. And I listen to music all the time. I listen to music when I write, and that helps me a lot. You know, all kind of different music. I don't have any special music, you know, that I listen to. But I listen to a lot of music that when I write. And I get inspired because I read the Bible, and I have a little devotional before I write, and I pray certain scriptures, you know.
Yeah.
I have like three or four scriptures and I put my name there and substitute, okay. You know, and if you want to hear a couple of them, I got them right here. It's real
yeah.
short.
Yes.
Okay.
I would love to.
Proverbs chapter 16 verse 3. Commit thy works unto the Lord and thy thoughts shall be established. And commit means roll. So roll thy works unto the Lord and thy thoughts shall be established. Now, I'll read that before I write, and I'll say, Lord, I'm going to roll this and commit when I'm writing today to you. Okay? And that's one thing I do. Then the other one I always do as well. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 15 and 16. But he that is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is judged or discerned of no man. For who hath known the mind of the Lord that he may shall instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. And I pray for the mind of Christ and the heart of God, and that I can lead, guide, direct, and protect my characters, and that they will be an inspiration and a blessing to the world, and that my suffering and heartbreak and being by myself in isolation in a lot of my life will help others. And since my mentors passed, I depend totally on God, quite frankly.
God bless you. God yes. bless you. That's all we need. That is all we need. Well, we're up to the hour. Is there okay. anything else you would like to share about what's next before we go and yes. how she can contact you and purchase your book?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for having me. And Good Life Mississippi is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and all your independent bookstores. And you can, my second book, I'm not going to release it yet. It's called My Neighbors. It's the second half of Good Life Mississippi. And it has, all the characters are African American except for two. And Myra Boone, Margianne Roberts, and Johnny Paul Russell all go to visit Myra's neighbors who are parts or slaves and had a difficult time 100 years ago, and they tell their stories. It's brutally honest. That's what I would say about that book. And mostly dialogue. And they tell their stories. And I feel like that these people come to me and want their stories told. And they're, you know, the downtrodden, the lowly, and the unwantables, you know. But you know what? They have a heart for God. I have a heart for God. And I wanted to tell their stories in an honest, pure way. And that's why I pray what I pray. Of course, I know I don't have God's mind. I know that. However, I believe that I have the Spirit in me that can lead, guide, direct, and protect me as I hopefully make a difference in this world and through others that they can find the peace that they need and their calling. Because if I had this book when I was young, I don't believe my life, I would have made different choices, you know, And if I could put it into the hands of anybody, anywhere, any place, any age, this would be the book I'd put in their hands. And sit down, be patient with it. And if you need Kleenexes, just get the Kleenexes. And, if, you know, don't hold it against me. And, I love you, and I love the world, and I love everybody the same. I have a lot to give, so do my characters. And, you know, I'm not judgmental. I try to love unconditionally, and I hope to make a difference in the world. And I know that sounds a little cliche, but I mean it.
Yeah, and that's all that matters. Eileen, it has been a pleasure having you on the show, and I do look forward to chatting further in the future. And I hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous 2023, and good luck on your endeavors. Well, listeners, I have reached my destination. I am a award-winning author of the new book, A Journey of a Sapphire, and I hope to inspire others who are on their journey towards success to never give up on your dreams and how to recognize behavioral problems. You can purchase my book by visiting journeyofasapphire.com. My book is also available on amazon.com and Kindle Fire. And as always, I leave you with this quote, and do have a blessed day. Affluence separates people. Poverty knits them together. You got some sugar? I don't. I borrow some of yours. Next month, you might not have any flour. Well, I'll give you some of mine. Ray Charles. Cheers, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to All Roads 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson. Join us every other week on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio Station 1. And please visit allroads65max.org and become a volunteer or sponsor and be the change you want to see in this world. With your help, we can make a difference in our society and uplift those who so desperately need our help. Thank you for tuning in.